It's 10 o'clock. This is The World Tonight with Rithula Shah. Officials in Western China have imposed a curfew in the regional capital of Xinjiang province after a second day of serious ethnic violence. We hear one view of what may lie behind the tensions.
The Han Chinese have a poor conception of other cultures and a lack of respect for them.
A nighttime curfew is in force in the western Chinese province of Xinjiang after ethnic violence on the streets of the regional capital, Urumqi, spiralled out of control. Earlier, troops fired tear gas at hundreds of Han Chinese who marched through the city armed with clubs, meat cleavers and machetes to demonstrate against the mainly Muslim Uyghurs. More than 150 people were killed and around 1,000 injured in clashes between the two groups on Sunday. Our correspondent Chris Hogg has been monitoring events from Shanghai.
Chaos was the word China's official media used to describe the situations on the streets of Urumqi throughout the day. Protesters armed with bricks and rocks, wooden bats and iron bars marched through the centre of the city, watched by armed police and security forces tasked with trying to keep order. These were mainly Han Chinese demonstrators, the community targeted by Uyghurs in Sunday's violent protests. Uyghurs were also on the streets, and in places the two ethnic groups clashed. The police moved in to try to separate them. Tear gas was fired. A curfew's been imposed in the city for the second night running.
You're listening to The World Tonight with Rithula Shah. Meat cleavers, metal pipes and wooden clubs were just some of the weapons in the hands of thousands of ethnic Han Chinese who marched through the streets of Urumqi today. The city experienced another day of unrest as the Han Chinese smashed shops and stalls belonging to the Uyghurs in retaliation for Sunday's violence, which left more than 150 people dead and hundreds wounded. The Uyghurs were on the streets too, and Uyghur women protested against the arrest of family members. There were violent clashes between the two sides, and riot police fired tear gas to break up the crowds. One of the injured victims was a taxi driver, Huang Zhengxiang. He described how he was beaten unconscious.
I was unconscious. They're really despicable. Our lives were so good. Why have they done such things? Now I don't even dare to step out of my door.
Another Urumqi resident described how a girl was attacked with a brick.
The rioters beat everyone they saw. They beat people and smashed cars. The girl was hit on the head with a brick. My mother fainted when she saw her.
Tonight, there's an uneasy peace following the reimposition of a curfew and the presence of the security forces in large numbers. China's foreign ministry spokesman, Qin Gang, singled out Rabia Kadir, the chairwoman of the World Uyghur Congress, for masterminding the protests from exile in the United States.
Kadir has been deceiving the world. She's been consistently trying to divide China's territory and destroy the harmonious relationship amongst the people of Xinjiang. We ask the international community not to tolerate it and not to provide her with any assistance.
Our correspondent Adam Brooks has been speaking to Rabia Kadir in Washington. He asked her for her reaction to the events of the past 2 days.
I was shocked that the world is standing silent. In the 21st century, when people go to the streets to peacefully demonstrate and government cracks down violently and the world is standing silent. And also, I am surprised and I am shocked that the dictatorship, the Chinese dictatorship, can fool the world, can deceive the world just by showing the injured Chinese and hospitalized Chinese without showing any Uyghurs who has been hospitalized and injured or died.
How has it come to this for the Uyghurs in the last few years?
The repression in the last several years that Uyghurs is unprecedented in Uyghur history. The oppression reached the point that unbearable, and they banned our language from schools, and they're transporting Uyghur girls from the countryside of East Turkestan to interior provinces. They transferred in 1 year 240,000 Uyghur girls, and they arrested 15,000 people in the last 2 years, and they don't have access to lawyers, and they don't have access to the justice system.
And that's why these demonstrations have started?
Uyghur people has a right to resist, right to protest. Every nation in the world, every oppressed nation has a right to resist the oppressors. Why can't Uyghurs? And every other nation can resist, but if Uyghurs resist, they are being branded as terrorists and separatists. They are not terrorists, they are the freedom fighters. I don't blame any Uyghurs.
Rabia Kadir, well, the recent violence has exposed tensions which have simmered for decades. The Uyghurs are Muslims of Turkic origin. What's called Xinjiang, or New Territory, has been their homeland for many generations. But the recent mass immigration by the Han Chinese into the region has stoked resentment. Dr. Caroline Hoy is an associate fellow at Glasgow University and a specialist on Chinese population. She explained the background to the ethnic tensions.
The Uyghurs live in what used to be a vast commercial artery linking the Middle East and Europe with China. This was the Silk Road. And along this road travelled people, money, merchandise, animals, silk, you name it. And it brought vast wealth into China and brought goods and China, in fact, silks, gold, jade to the West. The Uyghurs sit at quite an important area along the Silk Road, and they controlled this area. They provided a lot of translation, they provided people, they provided links. And in historical times, the Uyghurs were in fact very rich. One of the dynasties in the first millennium more or less underpinned the Tang dynasty in China. They were previously were followers of Manichaeism but embraced Islam very early on.
At what point then did the Uyghurs as an issue, as a tension, begin to emerge?
Well, I think it's important to recognise that the identity of a Uyghur is partly a manufactured one, and it is a name that encompasses what used to be groups who previously associated themselves with the oases cities of this province. And this name has been embraced part by the population, partly as a means of formal recognition within the People's Republic, but partly as a way of identifying themselves as non-Han. Post People's Liberation in 1949, the Chinese started a project of in-migration of Han Chinese, and this has continued to the present day. It's partly government-sponsored, but it's partly spontaneous migration by economic migrants, to the extent that now the Han Chinese and the ethnic minorities in the area are almost on a par with each other. And if Han migration continues at the same level, the Han Chinese will in fact dominate the province demographically. The Chinese, if you ask them earnestly, believe they have brought opportunity and wealth to the region. But for the Uyghurs, this has been at the price of a lot of discrimination, and opportunities have been denied them. And for example, there's a lot of resentment. If you're a student and you want to go to university, you have to deny your Muslim beliefs. There are very few jobs open to young people from a Uyghur background. People are having to return back to the rural areas, to return to the land once they've graduated.
And to what extent do you think China's interest in the area is driven by its mineral wealth, or by the fact that it is essentially frontier country, or is it a combination of all these things?
I think it's a combination of all these things. I think it's important to remember that a lot of the exploited mineral wealth is actually transferred out of the province. For example, a lot of the gas is transferred to the industry sectors on the east coast. It is also important as a frontier region because it does have very close links with Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan. And it's important to remember that China now has very strong economic links with these areas. They want to import gas and oil from these regions. And it's important for them that it is a stable and secure area.
Dr. Caroline Hoy. The Han Chinese make up the majority of China's population, despite the existence of a number of ethnic minorities within the nation. Martin Jakes, author of When China Rules the World, believes that makes them intolerant of difference.
I think the Chinese have a very low understanding of difference, because uniquely amongst the world's most populous nations, over 90% of the population regard themselves as Han Chinese. That is a function of the extremely long history of China as a polity and a long process of identity creation and mixing and melding. The consequence is that the Han Chinese have a poor conception, a weak conception of other cultures. And if you look at the Tibetan or the Uyghur example, a lack of respect for them.
Would you say, though, that the sort of pan-Chinese nationalism that has been encouraged by the Chinese government, particularly since perhaps communism in its purest sense is perhaps not as evident in China, has perhaps made the question of difference and of identity more difficult?
I don't think that is the underlying problem. There are expressions of nationalism persistently in various contexts, for example, against the Japanese, sometimes against the Americans and so on. But I don't think that this is really a good good enough explanation for what's happening in Tibet and Xinjiang. The problem is that the Uyghurs feel that they, first of all, their rights are not being respected in terms of their culture and their religion. Secondly, they resent the population movement of Han Chinese into Xinjiang, which is gradually reducing their weight within the population now to less than half. And thirdly, they feel that those who have benefited from a very rapid growth rate, 11% a year, higher than the Chinese average, are the Han Chinese that have migrated in rather than themselves.
The Tibetans last year, the Uyghurs this year, are the Chinese authorities perhaps going to be forced to give more autonomy to their minorities?
One of the issues here is that we've got to remember that although the west of China is responsible for roughly half the total land area of China, it accounts for only a few percent of the population. Tibet and Xinjiang are small in terms of population. Xinjiang's only got 20 million people. We're talking about a country pushing 1.4 billion. So, relatively speaking, it remains, I think, an embarrassing problem for the Chinese government, but it's still literally on the margins of the country in terms of population.
Martin Jakes.